Hey, what's up? How's it going? My name is Brendan Bigley, and you're listening to The Internet Today, the show where I find the best stuff on the internet so you do not have to. Welcome back. I hope everyone had a good 4th of July weekend. You live in Canada. I hope you had a good Canada Day weekend. You live anywhere else. I hope you just had a good weekend. In general, I had a good time. Spent a lot of it at the beach. Got a weird tan that I don't quite understand. Met some people. Played shuffleboard for the first time. That was an interesting experience. Got a taste of that retirement life. And now that I think about it, I went right home after shuffleboard and played Scrabble, so it really was like I was retired for a few hours. And last night I got home from the beach at 7 p.m. and went to sleep and woke up this morning. So I guess I needed it. Anyway, let's get into the news. Quote-unquote news. Let's get into the strange stories on the internet. It seems like tradition at this point. Fall asleep on July 4th, wake up on July 5th, and hear about all the dumb mistakes that people made with fireworks. And of all the stories I read today, there's none better than the guy in Michigan who decided, I have a bee problem in my garage, I'm gonna take care of it by shooting off some fireworks. If your first guess as to how this story ends is he burned his whole garage down, you would be correct. Luckily no one was harmed, but I'm gonna go ahead and make the obvious joke, he definitely doesn't have a bee problem anymore, because he also doesn't have a garage anymore. Also, luckily, his garage wasn't attached to his house, so his house is fine. So I'm gonna throw two disclaimers on this story. Number one, don't set off fireworks inside. Seems like an obvious one, but people make that mistake, clearly. Number two, hey, if you have a bee problem, call a beekeeper. They'd be very happy to come get those bees for you. Anyway, more stories coming up next. My name is Brendan Bigley. You're listening to The Internet Today. All right, so this is some buck wild shit. Everyone knows the story of Amelia Earhart, decided that she wanted to fly around the world. Crashed somewhere in the ocean, died, never to be found again. According to a documentary on the History Channel, she apparently maybe didn't crash, or if she did, she survived said crash and lived out the rest of her days, unfortunately, in a prison cell. The theory has always been that she crashed on the Marshall Islands, which are kind of like the halfway point between Japan and Hawaii. They were under Japanese rule in the 30s when Amelia may or may not have crashed there, and they had very, very strict laws forbidding Westerners access to the islands. Why do people think that this may be the case now? A photo recently was uncovered that seems to depict Amelia Earhart and her navigator at the end of a dock under Japanese custody, while in the background, a Japanese barge is carrying her plane. The investigators brought in all these FBI photo analysis experts, facial recognition people, the whole nine yards, to figure out, is this Amelia Earhart and her navigator? And the conclusion seems to be, yeah, it probably is. Unfortunately, what that means is that Earhart was captured, thrown in jail, and probably died in prison, which is an incredibly sad way to go. Probably equally sad compared to just crashing on your around-the-world flight. But it's like a complete rewrite of this major historical event that I feel like is referenced constantly. There's an interesting interview with one of the researchers that happened on the Today Show where this guy is basically like, we had no evidence to support that she crashed in the ocean, it's just what everyone assumed happened, and now we have an actual piece of evidence that says that she probably landed in the Marshall Islands and survived. So we technically have more evidence to support that theory than her crashing in the ocean. Crazy stuff. When I was growing up, I always played the Sega Genesis. I was a Sega Genesis kid. I didn't have any Nintendo consoles. Later on, when I learned about emulators, I went back and played all the Nintendo games that I probably should have been playing in the 90s. Kind of gave myself an education, if you can consider playing video games an education. And I kind of swore to myself that when I became financially stable, or even not, if I just had money, I would buy every Nintendo console. And I've kind of kept that up. The Wii U, and recently the Nintendo Switch I bought on launch day. Very excited about all of them. And usually with no caveats, with the one exception of the Nintendo Switch, where I was really hoping that when I purchased the thing, I would also be able to buy another dock. See, the whole beauty of the Nintendo Switch is that you can bring the thing around with you, but also you can throw in a dock that's connected to your TV when you get home, so you can play it on the go and you can play it on your TV. It's a great idea. I was hoping I'd be able to buy a second dock. Unfortunately, I was unable to, but what I really wanted to do was have a dock for each of the displays in my house. So I have a projector in my bedroom. I would love to have a dock there and a dock in the living room that hooks up to the TV. That was not an option, but now it is an option. Nintendo now makes extra Nintendo Switch docks that you can buy, but they're $90 for a piece of plastic that has an HDMI cord and a power cord and connects to your TV. I've had my fingers crossed for a long time, hoping that other companies would kind of realize that this is a huge opportunity to make an incredibly cheap Nintendo Switch dock. Maybe don't even sell it with the power cords. I mean, that'd be a nice thing to do, but maybe don't even do it, right? So you can get the price down as low as possible. And it seems like that's happening now. Right now, as I speak, on Kickstarter and on Indiegogo and a couple other crowdfunding sites, there are companies advertising third-party Nintendo Switch docks, and they all kind of have the same format, which is really nice. So the Nintendo Switch dock is a pretty big thing, right? Because when you slide the Switch in, it covers the whole screen. Is it necessary to have a thing that big? Probably not. And that's kind of what these companies realize. So what it is, it looks like a little hockey puck with a USB-C cord that plugs into the Switch and then a bunch of ports on the outside for power through USB-C and an HDMI out to connect to the TV. And they're going anywhere from $60 to $70. And that's still kind of expensive, but it's definitely better than $90. And then you have companies like Nyko, NYKO. You might remember them from making the controller that your friend would give you because he wanted the good controller, so he gave you the shitty one, even though you were the guest. But they're an established brand. They've been around for a long time. They're making a Switch dock that looks and acts a lot like the original actual Nintendo Switch dock, and it's going to be $50 when it comes out. And what's nice about Nyko versus this Indiegogo Kickstarter side is that when they announce that thing is going to come out, it will be out. You will be able to buy one and you'll be able to get one. Whereas with Kickstarter, who knows if they'll hit their shipping estimate? Who knows if they'll even hit their goal and manufacture the thing in the first place? It's kind of an unknown quantity, whereas with Nyko, you kind of know what you're getting. And Nyko's for $50 comes with the power cord and comes with the HDMI cord. Now, I recognize this is a really niche thing, this idea to get a second Switch dock, because A, not a lot of people have Switches because they're hard to get, and number two, how many people really need a second dock? But this is my radio show, and this is my podcast, and it's a thing that I care deeply about and have been keeping track of very closely for the past couple months, so I'm excited about it. I'm excited to not pay $90 to get a second dock for my house. Ooh, and another one for the office. I'll put one in the anchor office. Oh, that'd be the best. Anyway, that's what's going on. So I want to leave this last segment a little bit open-ended. I spent a lot of the weekend, well, a lot of Saturday, playing Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare Remastered, which is a remastering of the 2007 game. A lot of other people spent a lot of time playing the Crash Bandicoot Remastered Trilogy, which is the first three Crash Bandicoot games all bundled together. And in playing this and realizing that the gameplay itself held up really well, I started to ask myself this question: do I really need the graphics to be remastered for me to keep playing this? If at the core of it, the actual game is fun to play, are these quote-unquote remastered graphics actually making it more enjoyable for me or not? And where I landed on that was not really. And there's really two philosophies going on here, because on the Sony side of things, you have things like the Crash Bandicoot trilogy, but then also the remastering Shadow of the Colossus for the second time, and this seems to be their trend: remaster these games and re-release them. Whereas on the Xbox side of things, they're just making everything backwards compatible, so all the games you played on your Xbox 360 and soon to be all the games you played on your original Xbox, you can throw into whatever the current console that you have is, and they'll just work. And I guess the same could be said of PC, where you could just download a game and regardless of when it came out, you could probably run it on your computer, unless it's super old. But the point still stands. I wonder which of these two is correct and better. Are there a lot of people who would never have played Crash Bandicoot unless it was remastered? If they had released those three games just on the PlayStation Network store as downloadables without updating any of the visuals, would people be playing it? I mean, it was incredibly successful. It sold a lot of copies, which will no doubt mean that they're going to start remastering way more games. There are already trademarks being filed for Jak and Daxter Remastered, so it seems to be the business plan. But what I want to know from you guys listening, if you are into video games, which do you prefer? Which philosophy do you think makes the most sense? Personally, I think really where I land is that as long as the core gameplay loop is fun, then I don't really care what it looks like, which I think is part of the reason why so many indie developers just go with like kind of simplistic pixel art, because at the core of it, they're just trying to make a fun game and then they add a visual element later, which feels like the right way of doing things. I don't know. Call in and let me know what you think. If you're listening to this in podcast form, go download Anchor and then call in and let me know what you think. Or you could tweet at me, at Brendan Bigley on Twitter. That works too. Either way, my name is Brendan Bigley, and that was the internet today. I'll be back tomorrow.